land use processes. It would also strike a blow to our expectations as surrounding neighborhoods that the city will conscientiously strive to ensure that there is an appropriate transition between the central city densities and the surrounding neighborhoods. The 1996-98 decisions sought to achieve that for sound reasons and based upon an evolved public process. That process and the development plan that resulted from it should be validated by this City Council. We therefore urge that you uphold the provisions of the 96-98 proceeding, limit the height of the new building to 65 feet, and void the FAR transfer that the applicant relies upon to achieve the increase in density that his proposed project represents. Thank you.
Thank you, folks. Who are the next three?
Uno.
Uno? Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Richard Levy, and I'm president of the Irvington Community Association. And I'm here this afternoon in support of our next-door neighbor, Sullivan's Gulch, because I've been involved in neighborhood activities for over 30 years. My address, by the way, is 2611 Northeast 17th, for the record. And I had written a speech, but a lot of what I had written has been said, so I'm kind of going to cut to the chase. I believe that this city council and this mayor and the city are in the right going in the right direction. We're on the right path to more listening, to better understanding the needs of all of Portland's citizens. Looking at the Portland plan, the new comp plan, City Connect, and doing more outreach to neighborhoods through ONI grants, et cetera, will certainly stimulate the two-way flow of communication between the city and the neighborhoods and residents of the neighborhoods. And those are the people we want to reach, is the residents of all the neighborhoods. It seems to me that this current proposal is sort of a cruel joke on the people who bought their homes. The Sullivan's Gulch folks won't say it, but I will. The people who bought the 12 townhomes expected a building when they were sold their property of a certain size. Now, there's nothing, if you don't have zoning next door that you can rely on, or if you don't have an expectation of what's going to be built next door when you're buying something, then, you know, you can be fooled. But here they had a 1996 city decision that said a 65-foot-tall building was the tallest that could be built there. Along comes a new owner and a new developer, and they say, oh, no, we're going to go up another story and 16,000 more square feet of building. So think of it from any one of our perspectives. That's certainly not what you would expect next door if you'd bought one of these townhomes. I guess probably the last question that I need to answer is, why is Irvington so involved? And the answer is that because we were a party to these agreements. Not only Charlotte Uris, but others on our neighborhood board were involved and participated. And some of us saw the earliest plans for the redevelopment of this block that showed only a four-story building, which certainly would fit the pattern of going from the Lloyd Place apartments, which are about 55 feet, down to something that's 45 feet, and then down to homes that are 35 to 40 feet tall. However, the 65 feet was the city decision. They can live with it. We can support that. As we go forward, Irvington would like to see decisions that have been made by the city and negotiations that have gone on between reasonable people to be valued and accepted and to have the city and the folks with BDS stand behind those decisions. So I thank you for your time. I look forward to a positive decision. Thank you.
Is that it?
That's all who signed up.
We will now hear from the applicant or principal opponent. Please come forward. You have 15 minutes.
Good afternoon. My name is John Larson. I'm the executive administrator at Holiday Park Plaza. And I just wanted to mention a few brief things just opening, and then I'll turn it over to Mike Silvey. Holiday Park Plaza is a not-for-profit continuing retirement community that serves 250 residents, which coincidentally represents about 10% of the overall Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Association. Over 60% of our residents come from within a five-mile radius from the Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Association, Laurelhurst, Alameda, and Irvington. And we have been at our current location for just east of the Lloyd Center for over 41 years. Our residents continue to serve vital roles in Portland and the surrounding neighborhood, and they share a rich tradition of volunteerism, sponsorship, and hosting of events in the plaza. In addition to the services we provide to our independent residents, we also have a health care center, which is a skilled nursing facility, which is great to have in the inner city, and a residential care facility that our residents can stay in one location without having to go to other locations. In addition, we have a 55-person wait list. We've actually had a lot of people who've wanted to move in over the last 3 years especially. And over the years, we've had to combine smaller apartments in order to make our units more applicable to the residents who are coming in. When the plaza was first built, they built the majority of studio apartments that were 370 square feet, if you can imagine a person coming from a 2,000, 3,000 square foot home downsizing to that. So by virtue of that, we've had to combine units, and we've actually shrunk in our capacity. So that when the lot across the street came open, if you looked at the plat, you could see that there really aren't many available options to us to grow in. We knew it was a small lot, and we felt that it would be worth it to purchase and really try to develop it up to the highest ideal, which was the 23 units, which we would have liked to have done and still would, because it makes that project much more feasible without relying upon the central operations of the plaza in order to make that happen. I think one of the things that goes without looking at is that the fact is that property has not been built on. There have been several proposals, and whether it was 18 units or whatever amount, the prior developers decided they couldn't do it for whatever reason. We can do it at 23. It makes sense for us. I wanted to mention also that one of the things that we're dealing with that is difficult is a retirement center like ours, mid-rise or a high-rise, usually are built in the suburbs. We're one of a very few that are actually built in the city limits of Portland, and we're looking at expanding. And I think this whole process just shows how that's somewhat difficult. When you look at an urban mid-rise, this is why we've chosen not to, because our residents have made a choice to want to come in, to live in the city, to take advantage of a lot of the amenities that are here, the transportation, all of those things. And I believe that in the end, our project will actually create a more age-diverse neighborhood and assist people in maintaining their social connection, which is very important for our residents, while receiving the services that they will increasingly need without going to other places. So under those comments, we therefore ask you to uphold our project as submitted.
Mr. Mayor and members of the City Council, my name is Mike Sylvie. I'm an attorney with the firm of Foster Pepper LLP, and I represent Holiday Park Plaza, Inc. My address is 601 Southwest 2nd Avenue, Suite 1800 here in Portland. As mentioned, Holiday Park is the owner of the property and the applicant of the land use application that is subject to the appeal. I think that the appellants have framed the issues quite succinctly. Basically, they have two major concerns. The first is whether the FAR transfer is proper, and I will discuss that in greater detail. The second relates to the height of the building and what is permitted and what is permissible under the RH zoning for that area. They also tie in to their own Sullivan Gulch Neighborhood Action Plan that somehow this is not appropriate transition. And we'll talk about that also. But those are really the three issues, I think, before and this council and also the basis of their appeal. At the time of the hearing, John Cole, the planner, sent a memorandum to the hearings officer that said that the proposed density transfer is consistent with city practice. And I think it's very important that there's a city practice here that we're dealing with and is also allowable. Mr. Cole pointed out at that time that density is actually assigned to sites within the city, not to individual lots. And sites are multiple lots owned by a single owner. He quoted at that time, all new housing built or converted from other uses must be on sites large enough to comply with density standards. The number of units allowed on a site is based upon a presumption that site development standards will be met. As already been mentioned, all of the requirements under the R8 zone for this site are met by our client's proposal. Our client has not asked for any adjustments from the RH requirements for this property. I think it's a very important difference. There is an adjustment from the prior approval that is being requested. The hearings officer, we believe, quite correctly pointed out that the term lot and site are interchangeable in Portland zoning code, and accordingly held that the Title III considers Holiday Park Plaza Senior Housing Complex to be a site, and it may transfer excess floor area that it has from its site to the subject site, which is across the street. The hearings officer supported his decision in this in a number of ways. First of all, he pointed out that there are a series of code sections, not just the one code section that was mentioned by the attorney for the appellant. For example, 33.120.205E5B, dealing with the RH zone, states, the density or FAR may be transferred from a site zoned RH, which is our situation, to a site RX or RH. It's a transfer from a site, not from a lot. Other code sections provide in an RH and RX zone an increase receiving site can't be more than a certain 4-to-1 ratio. Also, another code section provides building on sites receiving transfer density, or FAR, must meet development standards. Again, it's dealing with sites. More critical thing, somebody asks, have we already transferred the FAR? And we have. There is a process for filing a document that is recorded and is reviewed by the city staff and also by the city attorney. And that statute says, the property owner must execute a covenant with the city that is attached to and recorded with the deed of both the site transferring and the site receiving the density, reflecting the respective increase and decrease of potential density. That recorded transfer of FAR took place back in November of 2007. It was approved by the City Bureau of Development, City's Bureau of Development Services, and there are two individuals that handle all of those transfers throughout the city. So it's not just anybody within the Planning Bureau that was looking at that. Just there's two individuals. Plus, it was also reviewed and approved by the city attorney before it was recorded. We believe that between the Bureau of Development Services, the city attorney, city planning consultant on this project, and also the hearings officer have all determined that that's how the city transfers from site to site, not from an individual lot to a site. The height issue, something that everybody from the appellant seems to forget, is in the RH zone for this particular site and for a number of RH zones, which are high-density residential, that the height limitation is 75 feet. As a matter of right, a person who owns that property has the right to build to 75 feet. And that decision was made by the City Council by amending at a point in time a number of these RH zones in this area to change the height limit to 75. And that's why our client went in on a basis to increase the height from the prior 65-foot building height to 75. So it is a modification of the prior decisions back in 1996 as further adjusted in 98. But it is consistent with the determination that this city council has already made that 75 feet is the appropriate height limitation on this property, and it is a matter of right to be able to build to 75. The applicants also try and use this issue of that somehow the approval of a building at 75 feet is in somehow violation of the Sullivan Gulch neighborhood plan. that was adopted back in 1988. The hearings officer, we believe, fairly had reviewed the Sultan Gulch neighborhood plan and said, yes, it talks about general aspirational terms and a general guide to development, but it has no specific limitations on height. It doesn't talk that this area should have a certain minimum height limitation. It talks about, yes, a transition from this from one neighborhood to another. We don't disagree with that. The important thing is, what are the impacts? And the hearings officer said he could not determine any negative impacts from increasing the height from 65 feet to 75 feet. Studies were provided, shadow studies were provided, and there is no difference to the immediate property owners as to whether it's a 65-foot building or a 75-foot building. There's been some talk about the mass of the building has increased. Yes, it has. We have no idea where they get 44%. That is not an accurate number. The accurate number is closer to 32%. Yes, there is an increase. And there's an increase in order to be able to try and build a building that will work on the site and will function on the site, and also is something that you can build that will work economically. I do want to mention that there was, as if there was no discussions between our client and the Sultan Gulch Neighborhood Plan Association or its Land Use Committee. There have been numerous meetings since January of 2007 on this project. And a number of modifications and changes have been made over those 8 to 9 meetings that have been held with the neighborhood. And so our client also feels very awkward being here, because we have been able to work very closely with the Neighborhood Association for a long, long time. And you know, there may be a legitimate difference of opinion as to what's appropriate for this site, but we believe that all the requirements of the R8 zone have been complied with by our client's plan. And the hearings officer, we think, has appropriately reflected that in the decision that he has made.
Could I ask you a question?
Certainly.
What is your response to the testimony that we heard in terms of a deal's a deal?
Well, I think land use decisions are not deals. I think it would be a mistake, because things change over time. And something that was agreed to or compromised between a prior developer going back now 12 years ago and what is now appropriate for this site 12 years later, I don't think you can say a deal is a deal.
So Holiday Park Plaza was not the owner of Block 8 at the time?
Oh, no.
Of this 96, 98?
As mentioned, there have been a series of actual owners of the property that have, you know, been trying to do something on that site, but haven't been able to do anything.
Holiday Park purchased the land in December of 2006.
Were you aware there was a community agreement when you purchased it?
Our thinking at that point in doing the due diligence that we had done was that it was an RH zone that allowed the specifications that were there. Early on, as Mr. Silvey mentioned, we did try to work with the Neighborhood Association, but it wasn't fruitful to that point. But we weren't aware that there were this many limitations at the time we purchased it.
You were not?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
You have a minute, 52 seconds. You want to finish up?
Actually, I think that we've responded. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Now we will go to persons who oppose the appeal. Carla, do we have a list?
We have 6 people signed up.
Please come forward 3 at a time.
This Clayton Rice, Charlotte Cresswell, and Karen Hilton.
Thanks for being here this afternoon, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and you each have 3 minutes.
I'm Charlotte Cresswell, and I live at Holiday Park Plaza. I am president of the Residents Association. I feel that Holiday Place will be an asset to our community. We need a middle-income retirement facilities in our area, and the Holiday Place can fill that need. It's a real big need for the people from our all of these particular areas they're talking about. We always try to be a good neighbor. We really have. And this building goes forward, we will still be a good neighbor. Thank you.
Go ahead.
My name is Carol Hilton, and I live at Holiday Park Plaza. I support the Holiday Place proposal because I think it'll be the best fit for the neighborhood. I understand the resistance of some of our closest neighbors, because I come from the houseboat community in Seattle, and there, as in Sullivan's Gulch, the path of progress sometimes intrudes on someone's way of life. But growth will happen on the lot across the street from Holiday Park Plaza. No one questions that. And the impact on a few of our closest neighbors will be huge. There goes the neighborhood as they've known it. But it will happen. I support Holiday Place because I think it offers the best outcome for all of us. Its residents will make good neighbors for me and for the rest of the community. Like those of us at Holiday Park Plaza, they will be quiet, friendly, unlikely to litter, and likely to patronize neighborhood businesses. Nobody who develops that property will build anything that isn't financially feasible. As a not-for-profit corporation, we can be more sensitive to the needs of the community than might be the case for developers with investors to satisfy. I think Holiday Park Plaza will make the best steward of this land, and that Holiday Place will be an asset to the neighborhood. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Clayton Rice. I live at Holiday Park Plaza, and I've been there for 12 and a half years. I've lived in Northeast Portland for over 46 years. I sit in the uncomfortable position of being a member of the Neighborhood Association board, as well as a resident of the plaza. I've been on the board, and I've attended their meetings I haven't been a board member for this long, but I've attended their meetings as a representative of the plaza for the last 4 or 5 years. During that time, I know that this goes back many, many years prior to my time being there, but also that we've been good neighbors. As has been mentioned, the plaza represents about 10% of the total population in the neighborhood. And we have enjoyed the association with the neighborhood because they have been good monitors of the safety of the neighborhood, the development of the neighborhood, transportation needs, land use, and so forth. And we have enjoyed their support all the way. I think that the issue before us is simply that our needs require that the building have as many units as we have proposed in order for it to pencil out. We are a nonprofit corporation, and so we have fixed costs. And the more residents we can spread over those fixed costs, the better it is for the residents. I think that neighbors, good neighbors, can agree to disagree, and that's in this case, that's what's happening. We appreciate their position, but at the same time, we feel that the proposal, which has been approved by the city planning department and so forth, meets not only the needs that have been outlined before you many times, and I don't need to repeat them. Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
The next three are Alan Schroeder, E. John Rumpicus, and Kristen Esselin.
Oh.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My name is Alan Schrader. I reside at 1300 Northeast 16th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97232, unit number 508. I moved into the Sullivan's Gulch neighborhood some 51 years ago when my wife and I started our married life together in a residence on the corner of Northeast 19th and Weidler. Prior to this, we'd both lived in the Sullivan's Gulch neighborhood or in an adjoining neighborhood. Although we have not lived continuously in the neighborhoods, in the Sullivan's Gulch neighborhood since then, we are back in the neighborhood now, and we have always felt of the neighborhood as sort of our home neighborhood and a neighborhood that we care about. My comments today are based upon that feeling and also what I think I have learned or hope I have learned in the course of 5 years of service as a commissioner on the Beaverton Planning Commission. I wish to make 2 points. The first is that in a rather narrow focus on the height of the proposed facility and the wording of some of the regulations, the Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Association has lost sight of what should be their primary concern. That is, what effect will the proposed development have on the livability and desirability of the community and of the city? It is difficult for me to envision a development for this property that would have a more positive impact on the neighborhood than this proposal. But it is not at all difficult to imagine many other developments that would have a far more negative impact than this proposal. My second point is that the Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Association has questioned whether this proposal is suitable for a, quote, transition zone. I would like to point out that the proposal is planned for a site on a site that is on the western edge of the neighborhood, and there are 2 facilities, both of which exceed 15 stories in height, that are located further to the east, or in other words, further into the neighborhood than this proposed facility. That would seem to me to qualify very well as a suitable transitional facility. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Mayor, Commissioners, thank you for listening to us. My name is Kristen Azerland, and I live at 1735 Northeast Wasco Street, and I want to say right up front that I am a renter there, and so as a renter, I haven't felt, I don't know, I guess legitimately to be involved in the Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Association, but as I've spent a lot of time walking around the neighborhood, there are a lot of renters there, and there are a lot of people that rent in the area, and I want to say the reason I'm telling you that I'm a renter is because I, my landlord is Holiday Park Plaza. And so I'm speaking on 2 points that I want to hit on. First of all, fabulous landlords. I mean, wonderful community citizens. And as landlords, they're thorough and responsive. And you could not ask for a better landlord or and second of all, I do spend lots and lots of time walking around the neighborhood and go for long walks, and a couple of the things that I've seen first of all are lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of empty commercial spaces, some that have been built on spec, and also many homes for sale, and I think that that parcel of land, it's been shown even in a healthy economy that it's been hard to develop in a financially feasible way. And so I guess I would just caution the appellants that they might get what they wish for. If what they don't want is a building there, then by they may not get that building there, and it will continue to be a dirt hole, which I walk by several times a week, And personally, I would prefer to see a nicely developed, built, designed, and maintained facility there with, as Mr. Larson has already stated, they already have people to come in there. So it's not going to be a spec building where it might or might not be occupied. It's going to be feasible. It's going to be there. It's going to be there for the long run. And I also, walking through the neighborhood, when you're talking about the transition, as they mentioned, it's the building across the street to the west is what, 55 feet. And so as I sit in here and I keep looking at the pillars and I think, okay, that's 10 feet. What is the difference between, 65 feet and 75 feet? And I think that transition really isn't an issue. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor and members of the council, I'm E. John Rumpakis. And I live at 2000 Northeast Multnomah Street, Portland, Oregon. I'm here today because I have been a resident of the Irvington area since the early Depression. And I served as chairman of the Irvington Revitalization Project in 1966, which received national acclaim, and there's two volumes on the restoration of that area and turning it around. We had 18 people, worked amiably. This kind of consternation that I have seen in the neighborhoods, particularly this neighborhood in Irvington, is something that has scared away a lot of future development for the Lloyd Center area. And you can look at the vacancies that are occurring now, and I am just outright plain concerned. When we have opportunities, and I just talked with another developer on 33rd and Broadway, and how he was treated for 7 to 8 years, and nothing's come out of the ground today. First, I want to say I agree with the plan that with planner John Cole and the findings of the hearings officer Ian Simpson. And my chief purpose up here is to explain to you historically that the area between 15th, 16th corridor on the west and the area on the north side, which would be Widener, and 21st Avenue on the east side, and Multnomah on the south. That rectangle was one of the largest takings by the city of Portland propagated by the Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Association. Now, I'll explain to you what happened. This area was zoned, and it was supposed to be the Pearl District for the area around the Lloyd Center. This was taken away because the zone and designation at that time, from the year of 1959 through 75, the designation was AO. And I'll read to you that this designation, AO makes allowances for tall apartment buildings in the central part of Portland, as no absolute height limit is imposed. It was the Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Association, where I live, that downzoned all of this area and caused the abrupt change in height. Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
That's all who signed up.
Okay. We will hear the rebuttal by the appellant. You have 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Commissioners. Again, for the record, my name is Daniel Cairns. I'd like to make clear, my clients have no quarrel at all with the Holiday Park Plaza people. There have always been an integral part of this neighborhood. Many of the residents live are on the Neighborhood Association Board. Everything that Mr. Larson said about the services and facilities they provide, it's true. I suspect that a number of my clients are among those 55 people on the list for this facility because it's a great retirement opportunity within a neighborhood where people have grown up. And you've seen today that there are quite a few people who've lived there for a long time, those that were part of the original agreement, the original deal that was struck in 1996. And I think also you heard a lot of testimony about how there has been a lot of active neighborhood association work. People have attended countless thousands and thousands of hours worth of meetings down here in downtown City Hall, in putting together plans, putting together revitalization plans, putting together this agreement that was memorialized by the hearings officer in 1996. And I think it's important to understand, kind of getting to this a deal's a deal argument, that the 1996 decision, it imposed a number of burdens and granted a number of benefits to the developer at that time. And it was a consensus agreement by the two neighborhood associations, the developer and the neighbors who lived there. When Mr. Silvey talks about a property right to go to 75 feet, well, that's not true if the property is encumbered by things like the 1996 decision. So we've heard a lot over the past few years about perceived property rights, but as regulators, you know that there's a lot more goes into it than just the base zoning, that the changes every time you change, make a legislative change. This decision came about through a very detailed collaborative effort, and the last lot to develop it, and a new developer comes in to own the lot, can't just cherry-pick the benefits and leave behind the burdens. Get rid of the burdens, amend out of the decision the burdens that come with it. This lot 8 was approved at substandard size, it's below 8,000 square feet. It's 7,905 square feet instead of 10. So it's substandard size, came with a height limit, came with reduced setbacks, multiple reduced setbacks. And now they want to eliminate the binding nature that is clearly states that all of these adjustments are interrelated. And so if you're inclined to approve this, then you need to go back and undo the deal in all respects. You can't allow this sort of cherry picking. I'd like to make some specific comments in regard to Mr. Silvey's code interpretation. Staff interpretation is not binding precedent in this state. It certainly is not binding on the City Council, and it's not binding on any review body above the City Council. I understand I work with staff all the time in a number of jurisdictions, and staff has their views. But the code is adopted by you, and the code language controls. And Mr. Silvey picks out the zoning section from the FAR transfer. And if you look at the section we're relying on, at the second paragraph, it says density or FAR from the site of a landmark may be transferred to any site allowed by paragraph 5. That's what Mr. Silvey's relying on. Below, within the recognized neighborhood where the landmark is located or to any site within 2 miles. So he relies on the section dealing with zoning, the different types of zoning where you can transfer FAR from zone to zone in the context of these landmarks. The only section that authorizes a transfer, it says transfers may be only between lots within a block or between lots that would be abutting except for a right-of-way. He ignores that, and the hearings officer was incorrect when he said site and lot are used interchangeably. They're not. It is a very carefully drafted provision. It is a significant difference, going from 65 up to 75 feet. There's a certain amount of shading, of course, but just the height, the bulk, the massing of the structure is significant. And that's why it was a hard negotiated agreement back in 1996.
So if I could just ask you, and we'll give a little more time, by way of devil's advocacy or due diligence, I mean, why is it significant, 10 feet?
If you look at the drawings that were incorporated by reference in the 96 decision. It shows it fills the whole block, and the setback adjustments were granted on this lot 8 also. So it's not just, you know, a building with regular size setbacks. It will fill the block. And if you look at it in context with the townhouses next to it, with the townhouses across the street, it is a very imposing presence. And you deal with these kind of height and massing issues all the time. In the Greenway regulations, that's what your step back requirements are. In downtown, to avoid this canyon effect, height and massing is significant. Those are important factors, and that's exactly the kind of negative impact this structure is going to have at 75 feet versus 65 feet. Thank you.
But is there any, you mentioned shading, is there a practical impact on shading from 65?
There's some. That's not going to be that significant, I suspect, the shading. There, of course, 75 feet going up another 10 feet is going to cast a longer shadow, more days of the year. It's going to shade the courtyards of the townhouses across the street. So there is a, but you've taken the solar ordinance out of your code, and so it's less of a factor. It's more the design issue of the massing, the imposing massiveness of this structure that fills the lot, because the 96 decision, it granted a bunch of adjustments to this lot. Mm-hmm. And so the benefits and the burdens, they come together, they came together, they should not be allowed to be separated in this way. And you have the authority to deny this because of that this is not an amendable portion of this decision, that this design is not in substantial compliance with the original provisions. Also, the code section 120.210 that I cited earlier, you can't develop a substandard size lot unless it meets two factors, and I've quoted those in my letter. It doesn't meet those. The only way it's developable is under the 1996 decision. And I think that's significant.
And you're also saying that the sign-off by BDS on the FAR transfer is not?
The hearings officer approved the FAR transfer. It's a very important part of his decision. And that decision has been appealed to you. So you decide whether the FAR transfer is proper or not. Also, the city attorney, he grants a lot of emphasis on the city attorney, who reviewed it and signed it for form only. So the FAR transfer provision is a section of your city code. It's a discretionary land use regulation. I would argue that it can't be made administratively, that there have to be, it's a land use decision, and it's part of this land use decision that's on appeal to you, so you decide it. You interpret your code. You're the ones who adopted it. And the code language is quite clear, notwithstanding past practice, notwithstanding staff's interpretation.
Further questions?
I'm prepared to do just that as soon as we're done.
I have a question for the okay. staff person. Thank you.
Thank you.
Could the staff person come forward? Seems to be a lot of discussion around lot versus site. We've heard
yes, sir.
Both sides talk about that. How did you folks evaluate that information? And it appears as if the decision that was made is that it was the site of the entire plaza rather than just a single lot. So, but could you explain that?
Mayor, I'll explain it from my perspective. I'm familiar with the debate between whether or not it's the code refers to a site or the code refers to a lot. In my approach to this particular application, I ended up with an opinion that whether or not you use the phrase lot or site was not determinative to me, and I'm sorry for using that phrase. And the reason that I didn't think it was important in the final analysis, and I'm looking for a slide. On the screen, you see three tax lots of the Holiday Plaza Tower.
And earlier you saw that these were made up of a number of originally platted lots, these 5,000 square foot building blocks that have now been purchased by and built on by one owner. And there is only one historic lot that is adjacent to the new development site, except for Clackamas Street. However, when they developed the Holiday Plaza Tower, when they were done, they have 15,000 square feet of leftover development rights, if you will. And I don't think anybody is disputing that as an accurate number. And at a staff level, I had to ask, well, where does that 15,000 square feet land? And in my interpretation, it could just as easily land on the upper northwest corner of that property as you would say it accrues to the southern portion of that lot. So I understand that there's a distinction and there's a difference in definition in the code between lot and a site, but I think that the 15,000 square feet of available density on the Holiday Plaza Tower site accrues just as much to the lot one as it does any other location. And it's not a legal definition, but it's also one that played into my thinking. There's also a definition of ownership within the development code. And a property owner can come to the city and they can say, I'm interested in developing on my piece of property. And they can either include, you know, one of their legal lots, or they could include a combination of those legal lots when they come into the city for us to review their proposal. At the beginning of the process, Holiday Plaza, if they thought that there was going to be this debate over density transfer, they could have come to the city and said, we're interested in developing Lot 8, but we're coming to you with our entire ownership. And they could have included the tower in their ownership that they wanted the city to take a look at the development proposal from. And if they had chosen that approach, this density transfer wouldn't have been required because it all would have been under one ownership.
On the appeal, on subsection 2 of the appeal, it refers to the fact that the underlying RH zone district regulations as implemented through the 96 and 98 land division approvals. Is that the same reference that the appellants are using in describing the agreement from 1996, or is that something else? Do you understand my question?
Could you?
I just want to make sure.
Yeah.
We've been referenced an agreement, and I thought I heard the appellants describe it as the result of a land use hearing officer's decision. I thought I heard that from 1996.
In 1996, it was a hearings officer decision that approved the land division with adjustments that resulted in this large block being divided up into 12 townhome sites and one multifamily development site. So I think that when you've heard people refer to a 1996 agreement, they are referring to the 1996 hearings officer decision.
But in here they reference the 1996 and 98 land division approvals. I'm asking, are those the same?
Yes, they are.
So I guess I wanted to ask our attorney, Catherine Beaumont, to respond, I guess, to two issues. One is that Mr. Cairns, in his letter to us on the issue of lot versus site, cites a LUBA decision. I guess it's Goodman versus City of Portland, which he says basically upholds this distinction between lots versus site, although it looks like it all depends what word you put in front of lot, because I guess this decision dealt with parking lots. Mr. Karen's arguing tax lots. So, I don't know. Do you want to weigh in on that? And then I guess the other issue is the 96 approval being binding on a subsequent property owner of Lot 8 or Block 8.
I don't have a copy of Mr. Karen's letter, so I can't respond specifically to the language he's quoting. I think the issue for you on the FAR transfer is you've been presented with two competing interpretations of the code, and you'll need to decide which one you find most persuasive. The appellant, the Neighborhood Association's interpretation, focuses on a specific provision of the code. It's a subsection, one of several subsections within a provision of the code. And they focus on that to say the only FAR transfer permitted here is between lots that are abutting, and they argue the only lot that's abutting Lot 8 is the one directly across the street. The applicant's interpretation, applicant's staff and hearings officer's interpretation of the code sort of looks at the whole section and the various subsections and points out that it refers in some places to the word site and to some places in the word lot, and argues that they're used interchangeably, and as a result, you can transfer the total 15,000 square feet of FAR to Lot 8. The Neighborhood Association's position, as I understand it, would result in only allowing 5,000 square feet of FAR to be transferred across the street. So there are two competing interpretations before you.
Do you have an opinion on those two interpretations?
Arguments can be made for and against both interpretations. So
that's what I thought you'd say.
You, as the governing body that adopted the code, are in the position of having to make that determination.
I've got a clarifying question before I get to your next question. Do we, by making a decision one way or another on this particular case, set a precedence?
Your decision on any land use review applies to the facts and that's before you. That doesn't stop people from quoting any decision you make later as a precedent. So your decision is fact specific, but it may come back at you in a later case. To answer your second question, our code does require land use approvals to be recorded, which means they run with the land, they're binding on a subsequent owner, until the code is either changed in a way that makes it unnecessary, or until somebody seeks a different land use approval for the property, or until they seek to amend the prior land use approval. So short answer, yes, the 1996 decision, land use decision, is binding and does run with the land.
So the applicants are within their rights, though, to ask us to...
They're within their right to ask you to change it.
Okay. But is it, when the land is sold, is it a requirement of the seller to advise the person purchasing or the organization purchasing it that it has these restrictions on it?
I can tell you that a land use decision that is recorded should show up on a title report and should be referenced in a title report. And that would at least put a subsequent purchaser on notice that they ought to go check and investigate what that land use decision said and if it contains any conditions that would affect their decision to purchase the property one way or the other, or their ability to develop it in the way they want.
Do we know if that occurred or not?
I have no way of knowing that.
Staff know?
But it's buyer beware.
Well, yeah, I think Holiday Park Plaza said they were not aware of it.
I'm not sure that's the issue before us. I mean, if we're ready, I'm ready to make a motion.
Any further questions? At this point, the council will make one of three decisions. We'll deny the appeal, grant the appeal, or grant the appeal but ask with new information be considered, or ask for amendment language. Commissioner Leonard?
Mayor Potter, I move to uphold the neighborhood's appeal and overturn the hearings officer's report.
Second.
Call the vote.
Adams?
Well, I want to be clear that Holiday Park, which I have some familiarity with, is an excellent facility and well-managed, and whose residents are very active, as is evidenced by their activity in the neighborhood. So thank you. But in this particular case, I'm persuaded that the deal that was reached with the neighborhood has precedent with me in this particular case. But I also want to be clear that my decision or my vote today is based on a site-specific factors and does not set a precedent for me when considering future cases regarding potential FAR transfers or any other elements of this. Aye.
Leonard.
I believe that we have to have, as a city, integrity in our processes, and they need to be defendable in the short term as well as the long term. Today we're dealing with a long-term land use issue that was decided originally over a decade ago, and in my view, the argument that a deal is a deal is a compelling argument in this case, given that it was fairly clear that the specific criteria that was used to approve the land division over 10 years ago was very specific as to what the project should look like. And I appreciate the tenor of the discussion between the parties. I appreciate staff's hard work on this. These are hard decisions to make. But I think that the neighborhood has done a good job in making their case, and I vote aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I think, unfortunately, I'm going to disagree. And I find that, a deal is a deal. It's also provided in our code that somebody can come forward and seek to change that deal and present their corresponding arguments to do that. And I think there have been some compelling arguments presented. And I guess really when I look at this, you know, transition from the Central City District to the Sullivan's Gulch neighborhood, you know, when you look at the existing built environment, to me that transition, even though the Central City District ends at 16th, when you look at the type of development along between 16th and 17th, to me that represents the transition zone from sort of medium density down to residential standards. And I also think, you know, to the extent a deal's a deal, to the fact that our Bureau of Development Services did sign off on the FAR transfer, I think that's something that we have to weigh in terms of, even though I guess it's before we can overturn that, I guess I don't buy quite the legal reasoning that was put forward as to the distinctions between a lot and a site that Mr. Cairns so eloquently stated. So I would vote against upholding the appeal. Yes. No. No.
Potter.
Well, I was listening to the city attorney state that the 1996 land use hearings officer's decision is binding until it's overturned. And I think that the neighborhood has operated in good faith with that as a basis. And I've heard no information that at this point I'd feel compelled to overturn it. So I vote aye.
So, Mayor Potter, this will be a tentative decision. We will need to bring this back for adoption of findings at a future date. And our code provides that where the prevailing party is represented by an attorney or a planning consultant, it is their responsibility to draft the findings and submit them to us for review. So perhaps about 3 weeks?
It'll be April 10th, a Thursday, at 2 p.m.,
Would that be our only reason for meeting at 2 p.m. on April 10th?
It would be. Do you want to put it into the morning?
Yeah.
The night. Good.
Wednesday morning?
Yeah. We could do that Wednesday morning, the 9:30 session. If we need a time certain, we'd give it the 10 o'clock time certain.
Okay. So that would be at 10 o'clock, April 10th?
April 9th.
April 9th, I'm sorry.
Okay. Commissioner Leonard, you're adjourned.
You can leave.
It's halfway out the door.
Yeah.
I see him.
Sounds like Phil. work together.
I have these back.
You take it back.
Oh,
there's also a clip right there, too. I didn't know. That was on it.
That, I don't think that's...
Why don't you go ahead and take that, as long as you're being an idiot, give or take the whole...